Welcome to the Situation Report. April 1st, April Fool's Day. And that was a little Godsmack, Red, White, and Blue. That was Colonel, Colonel Johnson for that one. That was his recommendation. So you can see I'm wearing my shamelessly promoting Timney triggers. I spent part of the afternoon down there today getting a trigger fixed. Those guys are great, by the way. I don't usually plug some of my suppliers, but these guys are great. I took a trigger in today that had all kinds of issues, and they took it in the back and fixed it. And highly recommend them. They're a good group of people, and they're local here in Phoenix, so locally owned too. Tons going on today. I don't even know where to start. There's so much shit in flight. I don't even know where to start. So I'm going to start. I think the best place to start is talking about the current situation in Gaza. So the Israelis bombed the Iranian consulate in Syria today and killed a high-ranking leader. So you know that's going to escalate fast. Then you have the situation with the bridges now, which a second bridge was hit over the weekend, which you can make the case either way. Yes, this was an accident. Bridges get hit all the time, humma humma. But I'm not taking anything as coincidence, just like I'm not taking anything to say it's not until it's proven not. So my normal stance is it's bullshit till it's proven not. And in this case, it's an attack until it's proven not. So there's quite a few ways to look at the whole bridge situation. But the bigger picture here is you're seeing the attacks ramp up. And you're seeing the pace pick up. And you're seeing the march towards summer start to accelerate. Why? They have to set conditions before the middle of June in order to bring out BLM, start riots in the cities, et cetera, et cetera. And the whole situation depends on the fact that they are able to set conditions to move the society, our society, Europe especially, into some kind of chaotic situation before the elections happen. And you're seeing the other thing you're seeing in conjunction with this, you're seeing a bunch of rhinos that are retiring from the Senate, and they're staying until they can't be replaced so that they can erode the majority. Every game, every trick that they can play, they're playing right now. And all roads lead to chaos by November. As much as I'd like to say they don't, that's where we're headed. And in every situation where you're watching the drama unfold in D.C., you have to ask the very simple question. Who's the money behind the person or people that are doing the actions or behind the words, behind the motions, et cetera? There's always money behind it. And I'm seeing tons of institutional money, tons of tech money, all flowing into D.C. right now to change the situation. And all of those, there's not one piece of that that is good for the American people. So we're going to see more of the Senate erosion. And don't be surprised if the whole quote-unquote Senate majority goes back to the Democrats before the election. The establishment in D.C. will do whatever they need to do to make sure Trump never comes back. This concept that Trump's going to, like, the vote's going to be overwhelming and they're not going to be able to obfuscate, we're not going to get that far. They're not going to let it get that far. They are pulling out all the stops right now, both with lawfare, with executive orders, and with the institutionalizing of the cheating. We're watching it happen right now. I don't know why anybody thinks that Trump's coming back. He's not. And if he does, it's going to be it's going to be a shit show. Let's just call it that. It's just going to be a shit show. So no matter which way you think this is going to go, you're going to see some, if not all, of the institutions that are in D.C. turned against conservatives and Trump. That's just how the game's going to be played. Now, I want to switch gears. I didn't do admin notes because there's so much going on, but let me just get back to admin notes. So tomorrow afternoon, I'm going to be on Terrence Pop Show on Redonkulous. It's a Rumblecast. I'm not sure what time it's going to be tomorrow. I'll post in the comment section after this. I'll be on his show tomorrow talking about leadership and bad officers. So it should be a good show. And then we'll have the roundtable again on Wednesday. I've added a couple more folks to the roundtable. So it should be, we probably won't have them for a few more weeks yet, but look for new faces on the roundtable. What I'm trying to do with the roundtable is create a big enough pool of either retired military, first responders, and folks that are coming out of the government to give a complete picture of what's going on. It's one thing for us in the military to sit around and talk about, you know, the conditions from a military aspect, but like the show with Tom Luongo, Tom did a lot of the talking, but he's the financial guy, and he was able to tie together a lot of what we're seeing on the financial markets with what we're seeing on the playing field and actions taken by all the players. And he hasn't been wrong about pretty much anything for the last year and a half, 2 years since I started talking to him. And part of the reason why at the end of the show, I called out the things that he was right about was that when we did our last show, I said to him, let's see how things develop over the next 6 months. Well, 6 months turned into 8 months and back on the show. And we never really did go back and take stock of the things that he called out. Like one of the things he called out, which I didn't believe at the time, was that Powell was not going to lower rates. He was going to see it through, and it was a race to see who fails first, either Europe or the US. And it looks like Powell's going to win that fight. Now, do we differ? Yeah, I differ. I don't agree that Jamie Dimon's still on message, but I could be wrong about that one. I'm not watching the financial side as much as I'm watching the situation develop in Gaza, the situation in Ukraine, and the situation here on the ground with people coming across the border. So lots to see in the next few weeks. I think we're really going to see. So somebody asked me over the weekend, how do you think things are going to develop? And I think there's a number of scenarios on the way things are going to develop. But let's step back away from what's going on in D.C. because there's another situation that people are paying attention to, which frankly, I think is noise. This whole Diddy investigation. Nobody's asked the question, why now? And nobody's asked the question why he hasn't been arrested. His house has been raided. Like three of his houses have been raided. Three of his operating locations have been raided by DHS. Why would DHS investigate him? And why now of all times? The only thing we've seen for the last 24 months is a consolidation of the left in the court system and consolidation of power with the FBI and the feds meddling in state business, and then the state governments institutionalizing cheating and passing more gun regulations, passing more abortion regulations, and passing more laws to restrict speech. That's all we've seen for the last 24 months. So why would they go after Diddy now? And he hasn't been arrested, and neither has anybody else. So the real question there is, who's behind this and why now? And who's the institutional money behind him? Because he's not the guy. He's just the front man that controlled operations like Epstein. But there's money behind him. And the question is, who is the money behind him? And why is it so important that they raid his houses but not arrest him? You can't tell me that this guy doesn't have a mountain of evidence around his house or his properties that would implicate him in some kind of criminal activity. They obviously are going there looking for something. You would assume that they're going there looking for something because they have probable cause that there's enough material there for them to turn this into a case. And the whole storyline about him fleeing the country, it's all noise. Until the institutional players behind him are arrested, it doesn't matter who's investigating, what they're investigating for. The way I see it is, this is DHS and the FBI consolidating all of the dirt they have on both Hollywood and in DC, and they're consolidating it so they can control everybody and take over for Mossad, because all roads lead back to Mossad in both Epstein and in the Diddy case. All these key players in the background all have connections to Mossad. So you're sitting here telling me that this guy's being investigated by the White Hats? I don't think so. But This does go in line with the disclosures. This would go in line with them throwing people under the bus to distract away from what's really going on, both in logistics and what's going on in the food supply. Have you guys been to the store lately? Have you seen the prices of just meat? It's unbelievable. It's gone up like 20% just in the last week in some places here. A steak used to be like 10 bucks. And now just a ribeye today, like 35 bucks for a ribeye. That's unbelievable. And every week I go out and check to see what the price changes are. Everything's ratcheting up in price. And I think it's only going to increase over the next few weeks. So there is tons and tons and tons of things going on around this Diddy case that don't, it's just noise. I don't care what they're going after. I don't care what they found. Until somebody drops the doomsday tapes that can't be edited and can't be censored by YouTube or the tech bros, not going to matter. The thing that you're looking for here is the institutional players being rolled up. That hasn't happened yet. Until it happens, who cares? Really, who cares? I don't care. Because it's just another pedophile that's being outed. And over the weekend, I saw several articles about the geo data from cell phones regarding Epstein's Island's been released. Who cares? Nobody's going to get rolled up. Nobody's going to get taken down. Their names are out there. They're already in the manifest. So who cares? Until somebody's arrested, who cares? See what I mean? There's so much, and literally over the weekend, I got so many messages about the whole Diddy thing. I'm like, why do you care? It's like this conversation around we've lost our country and I'm going to move out of the country. Okay. Where are you going to move to? Because every other country outside of the U.S. is completely controlled, especially in Europe. And I'm not moving to Europe because I don't want to eat bugs. I don't want to deal with their bullshit laws. I don't want to deal with being disarmed. Why would I do that to myself? And, you know, I don't know if folks have been paying attention to what's going on in the job market, because the job market is indicative of what they're trying to do. They're collapsing all these lines of operation all at the same time. And you've heard me, you've heard Colonel Conrad, you've heard Colonel Johnson, Troop. We've all talked about this. Even Colonel Piper's talked about this. All these converging lines of operations. So in the job market, most people didn't pay attention to it 2 years ago when they started rolling out this DEI. They never intended diversity, equity, and inclusion to be a long-term solution. It was always designed to root out white people and to root out conservatives from the government and from the private sector using the CFPB, the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, as well as the OSHA laws and several other organizations and entities within the federal government to push out conservatives out of the federal government and out of the private sector. And look at how effective it is. Look at how many companies are laying off and look at how many people are applying to jobs. And I guarantee you, and I'm using myself as an example. 2 years ago, I could pick up the phone and call anybody that I know in the industry and have four or five leads if I wanted to switch companies within one phone call. Everybody I know that's white, unemployed, every single one of them. And I'm in the highest demand industry in the market right now. Security has been the highest demand, the highest paid for the past 10 years. And now everybody I know, especially if they're white, unemployed. They don't even get a second look on their resumes. They don't even get a callback, because most companies are requiring that you get three and four diverse candidates and you interview them before you even look at anybody else. And when you have a job, that's open and you have over 1,000 applicants, you're never going to get seen unless you know somebody. And even if you know somebody, then they have demographics beyond that they're going down the list looking for, and it's an employer's market. So they're slowly trying to starve people out. At the same time, they're slowly ratcheting up the price of food and gas and housing to price you out of the market. They're trying to set conditions so that they can drive you into the social scoring system. And all the infrastructure's there and in place. It's been there for 2 years now, the infrastructure for the CBDCs. So the question that you have to ask, and again, this is why I keep asking this question, what is the line in the sand where the consequences of breaking the law are more dire or less dire, I should say, than going along with the system? And I can tell you, we are rapidly approaching that culmination point, and it's timed with what's going to happen over the next several months to lead us into November. There is no coincidence in any of this. There's no coincidence in the fact that the FBI has now switched from January 6th, and now they're going after people that are posting online in social media. What does that tell you? It tells you that they're trying to accelerate the timeline, and they're trying to push an outcome. How does this end? Well, this develops several ways. First, somebody goes off the reservation and starts a catalyst event, which is what I've been saying for a long time, because that's what I think is going to happen. You can't keep this many people pissed off for this long without somebody going off the reservation. I mean, again, think of society as a bell curve. On either end of the bell curve are the fringes. Those are the people most likely to go apeshit first. Then in the middle are the people that are the moderates that will abide by the law until they can't anymore. And it's the people on the fringes that are going to start whatever catalyst it is that's going to snowball into an avalanche. And the more that they accelerate the timeline, the more they do things that are not thoroughly planned and vetted out, the more that this turns into a chaotic situation that they can't control. And I've said from the very beginning, their arrogance will be their undoing. I say that because I've watched this transpire over several years, and I've watched a lot of their plans turn to shit. Like over the weekend, this conversation with Obama, Biden, and Clinton in New York City, there was a bunch of memes and a bunch of comments about it. They're trying to sell something they can't sell anymore. Obama's saying that under Biden, they've created more jobs than any other time in history. Everybody knows that's bullshit, because it is. And he's trying to gaslight people, and everybody sees through it. You could just go look at the negative comments on any of his social media, and you'll just like Bill Gates, you see people just flame him because they know he's completely full of shit. And what you're seeing more and more now is you're seeing more and more people come out and say that Obama is the Manchurian candidate. That's the first time in a very, very long time you're starting to see a snowball effect of counter-narrative going against him in social media. And this is the part of the information war that they were counting on us to go along with willingly. They were counting on the mind virus in Twitter to carry them through the 24 election to consolidate power. And they're seeing that erode quickly. And, you know, I had several interesting conversations today about the military. And one of the conversations was with the Lieutenant Colonel I'm going to be on a show with tomorrow. And one of the things that he talked about was that the vaccine mandates, the push to get people out of the military, the DEI, as well as the LGBTQMOUSC, blah, 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 however many fucking acronyms they have now. That whole agenda is to drive out anybody that's loyal to the Constitution. And then last week, the Army published an order that was basically inviting retirees to come back. They're trying to use all legal recourse to say, we tried everything to bolster our recruiting numbers, knowing that this DEI and the whole LGBT trans, that whole conversation is to kill recruiting. It's not because the military embraces it. It's to kill recruiting so that they can justify in the end a draft. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to say we did all legal means to bolster our recruiting. We couldn't do it, so we need a draft. And oh, by the way, most Americans don't want to sign up for the military, so we need to lower the standards and open it up to illegals that want to be U.S. citizens. And then they have their army. That's what the end state has always been about. It was never about the vaccine mandates. It was never about readiness. It was always about making sure they could build an army that wasn't loyal to the Constitution. And you watch, every fucking rhino in D.C. will vote for a draft. Every fucking one of them. Even Mike Johnson. That's how compromised the whole city is. So the real question you have to ask is, at what point do you pick up arms against the government? Because I could tell you, the moment that they institute a draft, civil war. Absolute, bar none, full stop, civil war. Because I will not allow foreign citizens that are not U.S. citizens or loyal to the Constitution to pick up arms against me. Take that in for a second. Because at that point, it becomes untenable to abide by the law when I know they're actively building an army to fight us. And who do you think is going to be the first people that they put in the army? Chinese? Absolutely. Iranians? Special forces? Absolutely. And they're going to be using U.S. equipment against U.S. citizens. So again, what's your line in the sand? Because that is the line. And it's coming. It's not just a matter of if, it's a matter of when. When this summer are they going to institute a draft? And the fact that the Israelis just bombed the Iranian consulate in Syria is an escalation of the war. And they're going to drag us into that. And we're going to go into it willingly, just like we're going to go into it willingly in Ukraine. And it's going to be within the next few months. They have to justify a draft. And what better way to do it? And you heard Tom Luongo. The Europeans need the war to write off the debt. They don't have a choice. It's an existential crisis for them. So it's just a matter of when, not if, it's going to happen. And when it happens, guess what? They're going to expect all of us to go fight and die over there. And they already know that most Americans are going to go fuck yourself. So look at the next couple of months and you can see why things are starting to advance rapidly. They don't have a choice. They're running out of time. Just like Xi's running out of time and Putin's running out of time. I mean, look at it. Look at their age. Look at the situation. And supposedly Putin's had health issues for the past 5 years. If all of that's true, let's just say for devil's advocate's sake, all of that is true. He doesn't want his legacy to be a quagmire in Ukraine. He wants it to be a victory. Just like China, if Xi's going downhill, he wants to make sure that his legacy is that of Mao. And China is a more complex problem. Because China has people in the Communist Party, like his two lieutenants, they diametrically oppose each other. They hate each other. So there's chaos brewing there. Then you have this issue of the one-child policy in China that's affected them in more ways than we could possibly fathom. So you have all that going on. Plus you have the fact for the past two and a half years, Xi has gone through and purged anyone that was a potential or could be a potential threat. He's killed good people that were loyal to the party. And now he's left with this group that's partially incompetent and some are totally incompetent and scared to act because they know that their head's on a chopping block. So you have set conditions for a perfect storm over the next 3 to 6 months. And no matter how you look at it, at some point, this will go kinetic. And when it does, all bets are off. Because the U.S. has high-tech shit, but they don't have a lot of it. And when they run out of high-tech shit, guess what? They're screwed. And if you look at all the arms and munitions that we've shipped overseas, there's not a lot left. There's not going to be enough hardware here for them to hold this place. It's going to be chaotic. So that brings me to the next point, which is readiness. Why do we keep talking about readiness? Well, we keep talking about readiness for the simple fact that that is the key thing that we can control. It's the only thing you can control. You can spend your time worrying about what's going on at the national level. But at the national level, you have no ability to impact what's going on there. That the die is already cast there. Just like the die is already cast in Ukraine, the die is already cast in Gaza. It's just a matter of time before the next stage and the next set of events occur. You have no control over that. The only thing you have control of is what you have to be prepared with, what you have in your network, sphere of influence, and what you can see in your line of sight. That's it. That's all you have. And this notion that you're going to have social media or a cell phone when all this kicks off, you're not. Because your cell phone is going to become, the moment that things kick off, if you're a high value target, your cell phone is a drone target in the garbage. Social media going to be down. Why even bother? Go to radios, go to notes, go to messenger, somebody running up and down a messenger if you have to. But stop thinking in linear terms that this is going to develop and you're still going to have the luxuries. You're still going to have the high-tech ability to communicate at the speed of light. You're not. All that shit's going to go down. They're slowly and methodically taking it down right now. And they're saving comms for the very end to create the maximum amount of confusion, especially in urban areas. So focus on the things that you can actually impact on and stop worrying about the noise. This P. Diddy case, I don't care. Until somebody that is institutional money behind him is arrested, I don't give two shits what they find and what they don't find, because it will never make the light of day until somebody that's connected to Mossad is brought to justice. And the only way that's going to happen is if the government collapses and we step in and we dig up all that evidence and then we go arrest all of the institutional players. It's the only way it's going to happen. There's no other way for it to happen. The FBI has already proven to be compromised. The DOJ is compromised. The judicial system's compromised. There's no end state that brings anybody of value to justice. The only thing it is disclosure. And this disclosure is distraction. Because until there's names of Hollywood actors and the number of children either molested or killed come to light, doesn't matter. It's just noise. And you're spinning cycles when you could be doing something else. I can tell you what I did this weekend. I spent part of Friday night working on Troop's gun, making sure his trigger was good to go. And I didn't do it because, you know, he's just because he's a friend of mine. I did it because I sold him the firearm. I wanted to make sure it was right. And I wanted to make sure he had something reliable in his hand when he was in a critical situation. That's why I focused on this weekend. I spent Saturday with my girlfriend and her kids, and it was fantastic. In fact, it was probably one of the most relaxing days I had for a very, very long time. I was literally out of comms for 3 hours. It was fantastic. And then Sunday, Easter Sunday, Sunday's gun day. I went and shot all my pistols and refamiliarized myself with all my pistols and hung out in the range with Troop for a little while and then hung out with my cousin. That was my weekend. And then last night I went through all my go bags to make sure all my stuff was squared away because I've been using my stuff. And I know I'd taken things out and I had to go back through everything. So that's what I suggest you do. The other thing is that take an inventory of the people around you. Take an inventory of their skills. Take an inventory of what they bring to the fight. And take an inventory of what they're going to need moving forward. Over the weekend, Rachel Molinato, she does a Substack. I'll post it in the channel. She reminded me of something because she asked me to plug something on the channel. So there's emergency medical kits. For those of you who have medication, we've talked about try and go out and get a 90-day supply of the medications you have. And she's marketing she gets a bump from her Substack. But these emergency medical kits, you'll need a prescription, but it'll give you a 90 or 120 day supply, and it's worth the money. I hadn't thought about it because, you know, I don't take meds. So for me, it's not a big issue. But for others who have either high blood pressure medicine or they have heart medicine or they have arthritis medicine, you'll need 90 or 120 day supply of that. And, you know, if you're a diabetic, type 2 diabetic, you're fucked. If power goes out, you are fucked. So now is the time to get as much insulin as you possibly can before the lights go out. So I'll post the link to it. If it's something you can use, great. If not, that's great. But she brought it up, and I appreciate her bringing it up to me because we talked about it before, but I never really explored it. So I'll also post it on my Substack. And by the way, the book list is almost done. I was working on it last week, and my Microsoft Word crashed on me and took everything I had, which pisses me off to no end. There's two things in life I hate more than an unlocked Foot Locker. It's bad tech and fucking crooked politicians. Ugh. God, I hate bad tech. I'm going to ask my girlfriend. I lose my shit every time I deal with it. If it's not intuitive, it's not worth using. Okay, I'm off that rant. Anyway, but look into what meds you need and start planning ahead now, because the shortages are already in the works right now. And that's the other thing. We don't make medicine here. All of it's made in China. So if you need it, get it. If you need ammo, get it now, because it's going up in price. It's literally at 1,000 rounds of 5.56 is $500 right now. And 9mm is about 270 for 1,000 rounds. 45 is 370. It's pricey right now. Very, very pricey. So buy it while you can. The other thing too is over the weekend, there was a bunch of optics on sale, and Colonel Piperler sent me some optics. There's optics for sale right now, so like SIGS Romeo. There's a few others, Vortex, that have been on sale that are cheaper than what I can buy them for. So when you see optics on sale, either throw it in the Telegram channel, and if we can go price it out and see if it's a better deal than what we get it for, absolutely do that, because we can help save you some money, which at the end of the day is a good way to go. So I told him, I'm like, dude, buy two of them. And because I can't get them for that price. So buy them while you can. The other thing too is you're seeing a shortage now in firearm parts. I'm seeing shortages. I haven't seen anything either this week or last week from the ATF about illegals buying firearms. I know there's a rumor out there about that, but I don't think that's been formalized yet. I don't think the language is set up in the regulations yet. So when I see it, I'll let you know. But I haven't seen it. See anything from the ATF, to be perfectly honest. And I don't go mining their site to find which new stupid shit they post. I don't have time for that. So let me catch up with the comments, because you guys have been having a discussion without me around, that's for sure. Jizzy Wales is talking about biofangs. So I have biofang. I have three sets of biofangs. So I have the biofang UV5G, I have the AR-152s, and I have the biofang. It's a CB that and I have TYT digital radios, handhelds, and TYT digital vehicle radios. Here's what I say about radios: buy what you can afford. I think troops on. Yeah, I see. November 7, Charlie Alpha Victor. So troop will back me up. If you go out to brushbeater.org, he's got tons of good information about comms, signals intelligence, radio and radio setup. In fact, I was asking him over the weekend about a base station and a radio for HF, and he pointed me to a home-built antenna that will abide by my HOAs, and it's fairly clandestine. So go out to brushbeater.org and look at his site. In fact, I bought a couple of AR-152s from him because his prices are way better than you get from the shit fairy. Plus, it supports a guy that's on my round table, so why wouldn't I do that? So use the stuff you have, the radios, do some research. But if it was me, I would stick with digital and analog. I would have both, because you never know which frequency range or what spectrum they're going to be jamming, because they'll be jamming, and there'll be all kinds of signals interference once everything kicks off. So think about that. And yeah, you do have people to call. You just choose not to see that. The other part of that too is if you haven't gone through your bug out bag, go through your bag this week. Don't wait till next week. Go through it this week. Clean your weapons, have some ammo set aside, have your vehicle set up the way you want to. Make sure you got your you know, everything's full tank of gas, blah, 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 all that stuff. This is the week to do that. Because next week, you know, at the solar eclipse, you know, you never know. It could be an alien invasion. And I'm hoping for alien invasion. Hoping for it. Just saying. That would be way more entertaining than what I think is coming. Just put that out there. That's what I want to see. Man, little green men running around. After I get through shitting my pants and screaming like a girl, then I'll get self-organized and figure out what I'm going to do to return fire. But come on, alien invasion. Come on. Be way better than what we're seeing now. So some other notes, too, is there's a ton of conversations about Snowden and what's going to happen with Snowden. I think Snowden is distraction. I think a guy died, Assange. I think Assange is already dead because I don't think anybody's seen him in public in like 4 years, 3 or 4 years at least. So I don't think the guy's alive. And even if he is alive, they're not going to let him out. I don't see the elite letting that guy go for outing all of the stuff on the Clintons. And it's really the Clintons that are behind Assange. It's nobody else. They have been working the angles and calling in all their political favors for the past several years to try and get that guy under their thumb. I don't see Assange walking free anytime soon. I don't care what anybody says. So that brings me to one of my other points too. I had a conversation yesterday and today with two lieutenant colonels, and today was the guy I'm going to be on the show with, and we literally had the same conversation. What cracks me up is everybody's circling around the same outcome, but nobody wants to say it. And I finally said it to them. I said it to both of them because one of them's just gotten out of the military within the last few months. And he's got a really interesting story to tell. So if you watch any of Terrence Pop's episode, watch the one I'm on tomorrow, because he's going to walk you through what they've done to a lot of people in the military to drum out conservatives. And it's very targeted in what they did and how they did it. So there's that piece. Then there's the piece where all of the former military have realized it, but they haven't voiced it yet. And that is all of them, including myself, realize that the people that are going to lead this fight and lead us through this are us. Guys like me. Guys that have sworn an oath, that know this is coming, that don't want to put on our uniforms. We don't want to be fucked with. We want to live a quiet life. We know we're going to be the ones that are going to carry us through this. We're the ones that are going to have to be the ones that are organizing within our local areas. And I can tell you, it's a very hard proposition right now because a lot of guys are burned out with the situation. Because this, look, war is a marathon. If you've never heard me talk about this, then the next few minutes are going to be very important because everybody has a picture in their head of how it goes, but it never develops that way. It never pans out or plays out the way you think it's going to play out. You never have anything under control. You never have the ability to drive things the way you think they should be driven. Things happen, you react, and best laid plans you throw over your shoulder. But it's a marathon, day in and day out. Some days you're at 5%. Some days you're at 100% efficiency. That's why you have a team around you. That's why I continually have talked about sphere of influence, building a core group of people around you with complementary skills that you know you can trust when the shit hits the fan. Because those are the people around you that will pick up the slack when you're at 5% and you pick up the slack when they're at 5%. And every single day is 100% adrenaline. You are fucking tired every single day because you run on adrenaline all day long. Even when you sleep, it's all adrenaline. There is no point in theater when you are asleep, awake, or even when you're moving, where it's not 100% adrenaline. That's what we're moving into. War is a young man's sport. It's not a sport for guys my age. We're usually far removed from the front lines because we can't move as fast as we used to. And all of those considerations that you have just a normal day-to-day life become very myopic in a combat situation. But your life becomes very simplified. It becomes about food, ammo, and what you're carrying for hydration or for battle rattle. Every single day, you go through your stuff to make sure you got everything you need, your mission profile, etc. This is going to be a lot different because there's not going to be resupply. There's not going to be a manufacturing base that's supporting all of us in the field. We're going to have to figure out how to do this without the support that we had in World War II or in any of the previous wars. We don't manufacture anything here. We don't build anything here anymore. In fact, we can't even supply and rebuild the tanks that we've given away or the ammo that we've given to Ukraine. Think about that for a second. This may come down to sticks and knives. This may come down to you know, samurai swords when it's all said and done. That's how far down the rung we are. And this notion that you're going to ride this out is just fiction. This will affect everyone, from the food supply to the tainted water supply to the fact that there's no logistics or medicine. This is going to be something we have never been through in our entire existence as a country. We have never gone through what we're about to go through. And we have never had to face adversity in the last 100 years. And most Americans have never faced real adversity. Those people that are coming across the border, they deal with real adversity every single day. They have dealt with poverty that we have never, ever had to deal with. When our clothes get holes in them, we throw them away and we go buy new clothes. Most people don't even know how to mend clothing. They don't know how to stretch it out and make it last until it's no longer usable. Everywhere outside the US and Europe, you make stuff last until it's unusable. We don't do that here. People don't even know how to make something last. Most people don't even know how to look at a canned food and decide whether that canned food is healthy or not healthy. That's what we're going into. And we're going into a period of time where there's not going to be abundance in any way, shape, or form for anyone. And we're going to have to figure out how to live off the land, how to fight an enemy, how to defend ourselves all at the same time. And people are going to have to learn how to stow their fucking egos and check their ego at the door, because not everybody can be in charge. You may have to trust your life to somebody that you barely know, who's more adept and more agile and more able to lead in a critical situation than you are. And I can tell you right now that most people are not prepared to trust somebody with their life. Not really. It briefs well, but when you're in the moment, how many people are going to give up control to somebody who has the ability to bring them through it and then follow that person? That's a very, very small majority right now. So that picture you have in your head of how this is going to go, get rid of it. Operate from the perspective of what you don't know and start looking at the things that you don't know, because the things you don't know is what's going to kill you. And then the other piece is most people are blissfully unaware of what's around them day to day. They don't even know who's around them because you're like this all day long. Literally, I was at the store this morning and everybody in the store had their phone out. Everyone. You can't operate in a combat environment like that. You have to have your head on a swivel. You have to look around. You have to know who's around you. You need to be able to discern. And here's a key point. When we would get ambushed in the desert, they would take the little kids and the old people off the street first. Then they would take the women off the street. And it was very subtle, very subtle. If you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't even notice it. And then pretty soon, the only people in the street, military age males, and you know, as soon as they disappear, you're getting fucked. And you're getting fucked from every window, every rooftop, and every gate. And if you're not paying attention and you're in the middle of the street, you're dead. You're just a bullet magnet. Most people don't even pay attention to that. Most people don't even realize what situation they're in. How many videos on TikTok have you seen of that women are being accosted in foreign countries and right here in the U.S. by all these foreign males? And they have no idea what's going on around them. Not one fucking clue. It's because they don't have any situational awareness around anything. Not when they're at the gas station, with their grocery store, when they're in traffic. How many of you even look around your car when you're at a stoplight? Because guess what happens in an asymmetric situation? You stop at a stoplight, bam! Somebody on your right cap busts a cap and takes your car. You have to be situationally aware. You have to pay attention to everything around you and stop paying attention to your phone, what fucking memes are on TikTok, which bullshit song is on Apple. Don't pay attention to that. Start looking around at your window. It's like when I train new pilots, I always say the same thing. This is a visual exercise. Visually look at the airplane and look around what's around you. Look for other aircraft. Glance at your instruments, but look out of the airplane and see what's around you. Now more than any other time in our fucking history, is it more important for you to look out of the window and see who the fuck is around you, especially at a grocery store or a sporting event or some kind of a public space? Pay attention to who's around you. Pay attention to what they're doing. Don't be afraid to look somebody in the eye and say, what the fuck are you doing here? In fact, 2 days ago, 3 days ago, there was a gal parked in front of my house. Car's running. She's talking on the phone, and I walked out there and I said, what the fuck are you doing here? Who are you here for? What are you doing here? And I wasn't nice about it. She said, she was startled. She goes, well, I work down the street. I work at an adult family home. And then why the fuck are you parked here? Go park in front of that house. You don't belong here. She's like, you have to be rude. Yes, I do. Because 2 nights ago, I had somebody case in my house. So go be where you're supposed to be and get the fuck out of my house. And she was gone. You don't have to be nice to people. That's a concept. And that's why we're getting walked on right now. Because you're too fucking nice to people. You're too worried about what people think. Let me ask you a question. How many of you saw Fight Club? Best movie I think ever made. Because one of the quintessential lines in that movie is, you spend your whole life trying to impress people you don't give a fuck about. So why do you do it? I don't do it. When I left the military, I'm like, fuck you. Go fuck yourself. Hey, Steve, people don't like you. I don't give a fuck. Go fuck them. Go fuck yourselves. I don't care. You know why I don't care? Because 5 seconds after they walk away from you, you're going to give less of a shit about who they are than when they're standing right in front of you. So stop worrying about other people and start worrying about yourself. Start worrying about the people you care about. Because the way you're going to keep them alive is having your head on a swivel and paying attention to what and who is around you and why they're around you. And having the gumption to walk up to somebody and do something that's outside of your comfort zone. Hey, who the fuck are you? And why the fuck are you here? Get the fuck out of here. You don't belong here. And I learned that trick from the Kurds. Those guys were ruthless. They knew everybody in their neighborhood. Who belonged there? Who didn't belong there, who the shitbags were, who the good people were, who was around the sheikh that was important. They knew all of that. And they didn't mix any words. If you didn't belong there, you ended up in a trunk and they dropped your ass off in the desert if they didn't put a bullet in your head. That's what's coming. That's where you have to be right now. You can't wait until the bullets start flying to start having some gumption. You have to have some fortitude right now, because when this shit kicks off, all these guys we've imported, they don't even think twice about killing somebody for a bottle of water. They could care less, because that's where they came from. That's who they are. And every single time that you let somebody go by you that's a potential threat, you're dead. And trust me, when you get ambushed, it happens fast. And when this kicks off, it will happen fast. And then you're going to have to be about conservation. You're going to have to be about strategy. And you're going to have to be about communication. You're going to have to be synced with your communications. You're going to have a strategy. And you're going to have a place you can go that's safe, that you can defend. How many of you have even thought through that? I can tell you, I'm in an undefendable position. I can defend it for a little while, but if 2,000 guys storm this place, I'm getting the fuck out of here because I know I can't hold it. Do you have a fallback plan if that happens? A place you can go? Have you even thought about it? Have you thought about how you're going to get? Most people don't think about it till they're in the moment. You have to think about it now because once you displace, guess what? You're not coming back to get your shit. It's going to be looted. And you have what you have. And if you don't have a cash sitting somewhere, guess what? You're fucked. You see what I'm saying? There's so many pieces to this that most people aren't even thinking about right now. Now's the time to think about them. Now's the time to get your head in the game and get ready for what's coming. They just kicked off the first attack. That bridge was not a coincidence. That ship was steered into that bridge. You can see it in the video. They are attacking us right now. We are under attack right now. Not tomorrow, right now. And look, I could sit here all day and pull down the latest news and talk about that. But none of that shit's important. Because when you're starving, you're not going to give a shit about anybody's pronouns. You're not going to give a shit about what sexual gender or what sexual preferences they have. You're not going to care. You're going to be starving. You're going to care where your next meal's coming from. So start planning that right now. Start looking at where can I displace to? If I have to displace, have a plan. It doesn't have to be, you know, cross the I's and dot the T's. It just has to be a high-level plan. Start somewhere. Start now. Don't wait. And you got to store the ego. You know, I get a kick out of some of the comments that I get after all the shows because I can literally count how long before the first barrage of negative messages is going to land. So everybody's critical of Bracket. And look, Matt's a type A. Everybody on this show is a type A. It's not a matter of if we butt heads, it's when we butt heads. And I'm surprised it hasn't happened sooner. Part of the reason why I let Matt go is the reasons Matt's called, he called all the shit we're seeing 10 years ago. The guy knew this was coming. He saw it, wrote books about it. Nobody paid attention. And everybody's like, oh, it's a Matt Bracken show. Look, when you have a group dynamic, it takes a lot of time for the group to establish a flow. And it takes a long time for all the personalities to gel and to figure out what the sweet spot is. We'll get there. We're not there yet. Probably 4 or 5 more shows before we get there. But I'm not going to apologize for anybody in the show. And I'm definitely not going to take somebody off the show who's adding value. Because those diverse opinions, whether you like them or not, are probably the most valuable views right now because they're a different context to what we're seeing. That's why the Tom Luongo, that roundtable was very important because I don't have the context for the financial system. I just don't. It's not my bailiwick. And even if it was, I couldn't explain half the shit he's seen the way he sees it. And by the way, he's been right. So why wouldn't I let that guy dominate the show from time to time? This isn't the Steve Murray roundtable. This is a roundtable discussion. This is where different points of view and people stepped on. Guess what? Check your ego at the door. All of us do. You know, Conrad, does he get frustrated at times when he gets stepped on? Yeah. Do I? Yeah. Do I dwell on it? No. Because the point is, it all comes full circle. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but it all comes full circle. And everybody that's on that round table has invested their time and energy because of me. So I figured just go through the gyrations. It's like any operations thing. You got to go through several gyrations before you get a flow and it gets, and people gel and things start to move smoothly. That's where we're at. And I don't mind it going, being rough from time to time or somebody dominant to call, because eventually it'll smooth out. And the more people we add to it, the more conversation will be disjointed. And I'm trying to build, right now there's 12. I want to have 15 or 20 that are rotating through the round table and do shows of 6 or 7 where we have a 2-hour format. And this 2-hour format is predominantly focused on the current situation. Look, I could talk about how I want things to be, but we need to talk about the what's so, not the way we want it to be or the way it should be. This is the what's so. This is what we see. That's what I'm focused the roundtables on. What do we see? We're trying to build this picture of situational awareness so you can take that whatever area of the country you're in and make good decisions. I don't want to sit here and talk about the latest news of the day because it's just fucking noise, most of it. Most of it's gaslighting and bullshit. But the point of the exercise is getting more people that are subject matter experts in different areas. Because I think the biggest add to the team just in the last month, Clay Martin, Matt Everett, Bill Booper. That asymmetric piece that Bill brings to the table, none of us have. And he's a fucking expert in it. Just talk to him for 15 minutes. The guy is phenomenal at calling asymmetric the way it is and seeing the situation from a different perspective. That I can tell you, look, let me talk about intelligence preparation of the battlefield for a second, because IPB as a battalion commander is the most important piece of my entire battle plan. I don't give a shit what I think I'm going to do. If I don't know what the enemy's doing and my intelligence officer can't tell me what the enemy's doing in very succinct terms, I'm fucked. As soon as I step off the line of departure, the enemy has the initiative. So intelligence preparation on the battlefield is the most important part of any planning process, just like intelligence drives operations. And if you think I'm kidding, go watch the movie Gettysburg. I watched part of it over the weekend, and I can tell you that the one piece I was reminded of during the movie is that Gettysburg was a meeting engagement. The General Lee invaded the North and was encircling Washington, D.C. And he was met in Gettysburg first by General Buford, who was a cavalry soldier. And he knew that it was going to be 6 to 12, even 2 days before the rest of the Union Army showed up. So he had to mount a defense for those 2 days. The only reason he was able to do that until the rest of Union forces showed up was because Jeb Stuart, who was another cavalry officer for the Confederate Army under General Lee, was way miles away from Gettysburg. He had captured supply trains, Union supply trains, and he was trying to move them back to General Lee. And he was completely taken off the battlefield. Back then, we didn't have airplanes. All we had was horse-bound cavalry that was the eyes and ears of the entire army. So they would go out front and scout for the enemy. Well, when you tie yourself down with logistics trains, heavy wagons full of equipment and weapons, guess what? You move at their speed. They don't move at your speed. You can't run away as cavalry and then go scout the battlefield. So when Lee met General Buford, he had no eyes. He had no idea what he was facing. He had no one that was watching ahead of him to tell him exactly what was going on. And that, to me, is what cost him the battle. And it was the most pivotal battle of the Civil War. 28,000 casualties in 2 days. So intelligence preparation on the battlefield is the most important piece for any commander. And understanding and having your operations officer as well as your intelligence officer be able to articulate to you what the enemy's disposition of forces and how they've arrayed their forces across the battlefield is the most important part of your entire planning process. Because if you know where the enemy's at, you know what they have, you know what they don't have, you know how their disposition, then you can fight them. But if you don't have any of that, guess what? You are fucked. You're pivoting off of their initiative. We need to take the initiative back right now. Part of that is the local organization we've talked about, the personal organization we talked about, and the situational awareness. know what's around you so you can disposition your own sphere of influence to defend what you have. Don't wait for the first bullet to go downrange. Assume it's already gone downrange and start planning accordingly. That's the best way that you can get ahead of the curve right now. Because when this kicks off, it's going to be very chaotic. And it could start in cities with riots. It could start with food riots. You don't know how it's going to start. So just assume right now that we're already in a heightened state of not only tensions, but a heightened state of threat. And operate like that. Don't operate as if everything's normal, because it's not. Everywhere I go now, and this is a really tough environment to look next to you when you're in a car because everybody's got tinted glass. You have no idea who's next to you. So pay attention to what's around you, what type of car it is, what demographics typically drive those kind of cars. You should start paying attention to those things right now. You know your area. You know your neighborhood. Know who's supposed to be there. Know who's not supposed to be there. Know which kind of people go to the store, which demographics go to the stores you shop at. Know which places are high risk in your not only your neighborhood, but in your entire city. Know where the high risk areas are. And know, because you could go and look to see what the current crime rates are, that every police entity across the states, even sheriffs, publish a daily blotter of what's going on in their local areas. You can see it firsthand. This is what happened last night. Pay attention to it, because right now there's South American gangs that are roaming through Scottsdale and several key rich areas in North Phoenix, as well as in Cave Creek. They're going through houses right now, disabling alarms, stealing tons of jewelry, stealing gold and silver. They're stealing money. They're stealing high value assets right under people's noses. And they're able to do it in the dead of night. Look around and see what's around you. In fact, the latest one was literally a mile away from my house. I was looking at the blotter today. You can see it locally. You have access to all of these resources. Use them. Pay attention to them. Okay, let me look at some of the comments here, because I know there's a lot of people. Oh, I need to answer one other question too. So somebody asked me over the weekend, I've got a Bravo company, upper, Aero Precision, lower. Does it matter which upper or lower? No, it doesn't matter. As long as it's a DPMS 1 or DPMS plus upper and lower, they should fit together. And look, here's how I look at firearms. And Troop alluded to this when he was talking about his Glock. I am technology agnostic and I'm firearm agnostic. What works best for you is what you should carry. What works best for you is what you should own. And I don't go for the high-priced brand names, LWRC, Daniel Defense. I mean, there's a ton of high-end firearms. To me, what I look for is reliability, construction, and the number of failures. And I have Aero Precision lowers on just about everything I own. I have one full Springfield rifle. It's a Springfield Saint, hit and miss on the Springfields. I've got mixed emotions about the 308 I have. So far, it's been reliable. I had a Saint 5.56, which I ended up selling off because I put a new bolt carrier group in it. I put a new charging handle in it, and I put a new barrel on it because it was inherently fucking unreliable. So it's hit and miss. But I stick primarily, like I use Timony. Wait, wrong side. I use Timony. I have Timony triggers in almost all of my firearms. And they've taken care of me. They're reliable. In fact, I've used Geissele triggers. So I have Geissele in some of mine. I've used other trigger groups. It's mainly personal preference. But I use Aero Precision for a lot of the AR builds because their shit's bulletproof. It's cheap. It's bulletproof. It's reliable. Some guys swear by Palmetto. Some guys swear by Daniel Defense. Some guys swear by Bravo Company. Bravo Company makes a good, they make a good AR. They make a good lower and upper. Their parts are just as bulletproof as Aero Precision. So it really boils down to what you can afford and what you want. And I will tell you that on a couple of my AR builds, I have Black Rifle, gas piston uppers. And it's a little mom and pop shop down in Florida. The guy's name is Charlie. I've had his uppers for, I don't know, I've got a 16 inch, I've got a 308, and I've got a 5.56 upper that are all gas piston that he built, and they're bulletproof. I put thousands of rounds through them and not had one issue. So it just depends on what you're really jonesing for. And you know, some guys are Glock guys. I own Glocks. I own 1911s. I own SIGs. I have Smith & Wessons. It's what you're really comfortable with. And what it really boils down to with especially with pistols is how it fits in your hand. If it's comfortable in your hand, it's balanced for you, then that's the one you want. And if you like the sight picture, go with that. I've changed all the sights on all my Glocks because I hate their sights. It's personal preference. So hopefully that answers the question. I don't get stuck in one brand or another. I know there's some guys that swear by one brand or another. Like I have a couple of Henrys. I have a Henry lever action. I have a Henry 410 out in the safe that, you know, I use for demos. As everybody wants to be a cowboy, baby. And whatever, use that in combat? No. 5 rounds and then you're fucked. And that's why guys used to carry 3 and 4 weapons, because 5 rounds, you drop it, you pick something else up that has four or five rounds, then you reload, or somebody's reloading for you. So keep that in mind. Don't get balled up with one brand or another. Because I know guys that have had Kimbers forever. Kimber 1911s, Kimber 9mm, and they swear by them. Just like I know guys that swear by Springfield Hellcats, and guys that swear by Smith & Wessons. I mean, it's what you like. So that's all I've got to say about that. Okay. There was another comment in here. I could cut slides. I am, but I, the whole slide thing, you know, cutting holes in a slide. It's not something that really does anything for me. It supposedly it increases your performance, but you could remember these are blowback weapons. So what do I mean by that? It means that they use the pressure and the gas from the cartridge to push the slide back. And if you make the slide too light, then you have other problems. So it's weighted for a specific and built for a specific weight and purpose and type of round. If you want to run different rounds, you need to lighten it up. That's entirely up to you, but you go with the risks that come along with that. So keep that in mind. And when you start shaving shit off a gun, especially off of a slide, you could have other issues. So keep that in mind as well. There was another comment up here. I want to make sure I get to it. I'm not sure what you were saying about skewing the data. Not sure what that means. Here's the problem, Muck. When we start talking about specific wargaming, when we talk about specific scenarios, part of the reason why we don't do that in the round table, one, it can take 4 or 5 hours to wargame out one scenario. Two, it's... you're potentially never going to see that. And a lot of people are hanging on very specific things right now. The intent of the roundtable is to get you out of the minutia and get you to the bigger picture and start looking up here at 10,000 instead of down here in the weeds. That's the intent of the roundtable. Every time we drag you back down into the myopic view of the world, you lose the peripherals. I need to get everybody back to looking at the peripherals and paying attention to the peripherals and stop paying attention to the minutia, because there's a ton of it out there that's not signal, it's all noise. And the more of that you look at, the less you're looking out around you. Again, a visual exercise, focus on the visual exercise. Focus on the big picture things that you have control of and stop focusing on how this could play out, how it should play out. Look, we'll get to that ad nauseum. In fact, we've already had a couple of sessions where we've talked through this ad nauseum. I can't stress enough that these are scenarios that could never happen, but we're talking through what would our reaction be. Some of that's valuable, but I can tell you there's enough people in the audience right now that are just trying to get their bootstraps on and get their shoes tied that need to keep it available for everybody to be useful. And the more I dive down in the weeds, plus when you start getting into the minutiae of a wargaming exercise, you hear a bunch of military acronyms and most of it you're not going to understand. Because if you're not immersed in it and you haven't grown up in it, you won't know what the hell we're talking about. In fact, that's one of the biggest pieces of feedback I get from a lot of these roundtables anyway, is you guys were talking acronyms. You lost me in the first 15 minutes. I have no idea what the fuck you're saying. So take that for what it's worth. That's part of the reason why we're staying somewhat generic on these, is for that very, very simple purpose. And look, I could spend every show doing a different scenario. The value add here is for us to do, is for us to do high level and keep you focused on the things that are developing, because some of those things developing are catching us off guard. Case in point, it rained here last night. It doesn't fucking rain here in March. Not like this. It pissed down rain here last night. And it was forecast for sun for the next week. And all of a sudden now it's going to rain Friday. They're fucking with the weather. And they've changed the way they're doing it. And it's unseasonable weather here. It's unseasonably cold. I'm wearing a fucking sweatshirt in March in Arizona. The fuck is wrong with that? Usually I'm in shorts. It's 80 degrees by now. It's April. What the fuck? So we're focused on the stuff that's happening, because the what's so is going to be more important than the way we want it to be or the way it should be. Hopefully that's your question, Mug. So a couple other pieces of, so I'm working on a show for Thursday, and then I'm working on a show potentially to do on Saturday. We'll see. And I don't know about, somebody asked me about Doug McGregor. We have somebody in the group that knows him personally. Is going to ask if he wants to be on the show. I don't make any promises there. He's a busy dude now. He's a very, very busy dude. Would I like to have Doug McGregor, Scott Ritter on the show? Absolutely. I'd love to have Scott Ritter and Doug McGregor on a round table. I think that would be very, very beneficial for everybody. Again, it would be the Doug McGregor show for that hour. So, because everybody's going to want to ask him all kinds of questions, right? So, and he's busy with Our Country, Our Choice, which I think is something he needs to do. And if we can support him, we will. I think that's it. I think it's big stuff. Let me look through my notes here. Yeah, I think that's it. So you'll see a couple new faces on the roundtable in a few weeks. You'll see a couple more faces after that. I'm still trying to get Alex Craner to do a roundtable. That's the Saturday show, if I can get him pinned down. I haven't heard from him in a couple days, so I'm trying to get Alex Craner. I'm going to try and get a couple other folks that try to get Jordan Sather to come on the show. And Jordan's really good about, he does a lot of the background without all of the stuff that that Tori comes up with. And he's really good at digging through the details and putting them all together. So I'm going to try and get him on the show. I've been wanting to get him on the roundtable, but he does a Wednesday night show, which doesn't correspond with this. And he's been dark for a few weeks, so I'm sure he's just as busy as I am. But be looking for that. And as always, I'll be back on Wednesday with the roundtable. Not sure who's going to be there this week, which is kind of the fun of it. I never know from week to week who's going to be on the show. So far it's been good attendance, and I'm going to definitely do a one-on-one with Matt Everett, another one with Matt Bracken, another one with Clay Martin, and another one with, and definitely do one with Bill Booper, and do some one-on-one interviews, because there's stuff I want to dig into with each one we just can't get to in a round table. So that'll be over the next couple of weeks. And then I've got a third and fourth interview with Sherita Starr that I have to do. So I'm going to get those done. Yeah. Busy weeks coming up. But for now, focus on situational awareness. That's your mantra this week, situational awareness. Go through your shit by Monday and be ready for the alien apocalypse, because that could happen Monday. Just saying. We'll be back Wednesday. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.